Hello, my ladies, my gays, my theys, and the men who get it. I am Reagan. Today, I have the author of But They're So Nice, Unmasking Covert Abuse and Narcissistic People, Eleni Segredos, and she will be breaking down covert narcissism and how it relates to the so-called nice guys.
A one, a two, a one, two. He's a nice guy, what a nice guy, till he's screaming in your face. And he's a nice guy, such a nice guy, but he'll put you in your place. And he's a nice guy, what a nice guy, till he gets caught. He's a nice guy, such a nice guy, until he's not F the nice guy.
Okay, I'm so excited you're here.
I'm excited to be here. I'm a big fan of your podcast. No, I do. I listen to it in the shower.
Oh, what a good cleanse. It cleanse it all off.
Honestly. And sometimes I'll be listening to it. I'm like, oh, that's so good. Like, you're so right. Like that switch that they do at the end. I'm just like, oh my God, she's got it. So yeah, absolutely. Big fan.
Whenever I'm talking about a nice guy, like people immediately are up in my comment sections like, that's covert narcissism. That's what that is.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a personality disorder, right? Yeah.
Your book, first of all, the title is so amazing to me in the first place. Like, they're so nice. And then it's crossed out and it's like, narcissists, they were not nice. So like, what brought you about writing this book in general?
I have personal experience.
Welcome.
Yeah, right. I have been personally victimized by a nice guy. But also if we're going to go into it, like, I have abuse in my history. I have, a father that was abusive, very nice guy. He's like a super Christian churchgoer. And then, it's the nice guy.
Yes.
It's that type of person. I think after my own experience, I was like, oh, this is a actual thing. Yeah. And then healing and learning, and then I wrote a whole gosh darn book. So that's where I'm at.
That's where I'm at with it. I love that you focus a lot on the covert nature of the narcissism.
Yep.
Because I think when people see narcissists, they think of like the big baddies, the very like aggressive, mean, it's all about me. Like you spot them in a room, and that's so not the case.
Yeah, they think of like the Gaston character. That's what they think.
Yes.
And to be totally honest, I think maybe a few of them are like that, but most of them are wolves in sheep's clothing, right? It's a disorder of social hiding for a reason. They're not going to be the person in the room with the horns on their heads. It's going to be the guy that says, hey, I love women and I'm a feminist and I am just like so in touch with my emotions. And you're like, yeah. And you find out later, oh my God, they're a monster.
Yeah. So they're the worst. I'll never forget. I got burned by, I would classify him as a narcissist, but who knows? He has narcissistic tendencies at the very least, right? He was like that. For the first time, I was like, oh my God, are narcissists saying they're feminists now? Like, oh my God.
No, I think they're evolving.
Yep.
Before we had the big angry abuser, that's obviously a piece of shit. And you spot them in a bar and they're yelling at someone and you're like, that one I will stay away from. But what we have now is because it's, I think, socially a faux pas to be misogynistic outwardly, you're going to come up to you and be like, yeah, I know your plight of the woman.
I'm with you, sister.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's rough out there when they're, because they also are so good. Like, I think people forget, like, being able to be manipulative and be manipulative in a successful way, you have to speak the language of the person you're manipulating. Like, you have to be able to pass as whatever fake persona you're trying to be. So they do know the language. They do study the language. They do want to say the right thing. But anybody can say that. Like, you could watch a couple TikToks and pick up like, okay, I need to say I'm a feminist. I need to say I'm not like other guys. Like, there's a playbook. It's not that hard anymore for guys to at least know the language they need to use.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm almost like, man, we told them to go to therapy and now they're in therapy and now they're using therapy against us. Like, we can't win. We
God,
cannot win.
we've given them the tools. Like,
Oh,
you know what, though? Half the time, if not more than half the time, the people who are using therapy terms didn't go to therapy. They're like, I went to therapy. It's like, did you or did you watch a couple TikToks and like maybe skim the
no.
back of a book?
If they're going to therapy, they're telling like their side of events.
Yes.
They're going there for validation to stroke their ego. I'm just so hurt.
I'm the victim. Everyone's
I'm
mean to
the victim.
me. Everyone's so mean to me.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
that's the interesting thing too, is like there are therapists who specialize in narcissism because it is so hard to deal with in a therapy session. Like to figure out someone is a narcissist if they're the only ones narrating.
And that's why we say so often, don't go to couples counseling with a person that's highly narcissistic, because people think, oh, this is a trained clinician and they could spot a narcissist. Absolutely not. That's not true at all. There are clinicians, even clinicians on TikTok, who have been in narcissistic relationships themselves, and they're clinicians. So I always say, when people are like, I feel so stupid that I fell in love with this person, I should have known, I should have seen the signs, I should have seen red flags. I'm like, there are trained professionals that don't see the red flags, and you shouldn't beat yourself up over it. You know,
100%.
it's so invalidating sometimes, where they're like, oh, you should have seen the red flags. I'm like, where were
They were pink, if anything, they were
the
mildly like a little salmon colored. It's
Yeah.
interesting too, because I have had the absolute displeasure of being in a therapy session with a narcissist,
Oh my
and
God.
I got slaughtered. I got
Yeah.
absolutely destroyed. I was like by the narcissist, like just like immediately the therapist was like weaponized against me. And the
Oh my
therapist,
God.
because they're trained, I haven't told this story yet. This is fun. Because they're trained to be neutral, right? They're trained to not pick sides. And because even if someone's showing narcissistic tendencies, the narcissistic person, if they even get an inkling that the therapist is not on their side, they will opt out and they will never come back and they will not engage. So even therapists who do get it will still almost cater slightly to the narcissist for fear of like them like just detaching from the process. And so it's
Yeah.
like at the end, like after the therapist told me, like, do you know, was talking about narcissism, but like in the session, could not talk about that. Was like, I did not want them to disengage. I didn't want them to opt out. Like, I wanted them to continue and see if we could get any progress. But it's so disheartening. Because thank God I talked to her after. To be gaslit in front of a professional that you see as your
Yeah.
ally is so
Yeah.
horrifying.
Oh yeah. I can only imagine, like,
Oh.
it would feel like you're being ganged up on. Like, it's, yeah.
I had, she literally, so the narcissistic guy, he was saying that I said something that I did not say, like flat out did not say.
Yeah.
And I said, I didn't say that, right? Because I didn't. And he's like, how could you say that? You're denying, basically accusing me of gaslighting. You're denying, like you're
Amazing.
saying my reality's not real. And then the therapist was like, looking at me, was like, well, can you see that you did say that that wasn't said? And I'm like, yeah, because it wasn't. Like, I'm not gonna tell this person that gaslights me on an
Yeah.
everyday basis, I'm not going to tell them, you know what? No, you are right. You know what?
Just to placate
Yeah,
them,
I did
yeah.
say that thing I didn't say. And then she was like basically trying to find a neutral ground. She was not a very, first of all, not a very good therapist for this. Shouldn't have
That's
gone.
what I sound, that's what I'm getting from
She
that.
was
I'm like,
out
oh
of her
no.
depth. Let's say that. She was out of her
Yeah, that's what
depth.
it sounds like.
And I'm just like, lady, I'm not going to tell this narcissist that their lies are true. So we're going to have to come up. It was stalemate. It's like a stalemate because
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
no.
I think that's the other thing, is if you are to see a therapist, you need to see one that's abuse informed, and trauma informed, because there's
Yes.
so many, like, there's therapy, psychology is such a vast field, and some specialize in childhood development and they focus on one thing and maybe general family therapy and stuff like that. But these niche things, are what you need when you're in a therapy session with a narcissistic person, right? Mm-hmm. Because otherwise they're going to get manipulated just like everyone else. I always say this too, like Dr. Robert Hare, the person that wrote the Hare checklist and the dude that wrote so much about psychopathy, would often say that he gets manipulated and tricked by psychopaths and narcissists himself. And he's Dr. Robert Hare. So it's so common when people are like, oh, there's only 1 to 5% of them being diagnosed. Blah, 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 there's not that many. I'm like, yeah. They manipulate. They're very good at it, actually. You would be surprised.
Also, a narcissist has to go in to get diagnosed. Like, the only reason that narcissists go in is when their life is collapsing around them. Mm-hmm. And they're like, why is everyone else mean to me? That's why they go in. It's like, so you have to get someone who is unwilling to accept any accountability to mm-hmm. go into therapy.
That's the first step,
right?
And they fail that first step.
Step one. And then they have to self-report accurately when they have no introspection or limited biased introspection in a way that then the person can diagnose them. It is so mm-hmm. improbable and near impossible for them to get diagnosed. So when people are like, yes. It's this percentage, I'm like, right. That's kind of the point.
Like, mm-hmm. And even that percentage, it's 1 to 5%, it's, well, 1 in 100 people. That's still a lot of people. If you're on Tinder or you're on like Bumble or something and you're like, oh, I mean, the amount of swipes, you'll find a narcissist there. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny. My mm-hmm. wife is like, you're basically like bait. Like if you go somewhere, a narcissist is coming. Like someone mm-hmm. you meet. And that's true. Like if you have a past with it, like there's some bizarre way that they pick up on whatever traits the first person picked up on, they pick up on those right. and are just drawn right. to you. So it's like, I think people will get flack for being like, I mean, even myself included, right? Like I've dealt with a couple of narcissists. They're like, it's rare. Why? Like, that doesn't make sense. It's like, yeah, except if you've been with one, the odds of you being with another one increase significantly.
Yeah, it's... I told you I was going to be a big nerd about this, but Dr. Sandra L. Brown, she talks about basically the personality profile of victims of narcissistic abuse. And we all have very similar personalities.
What are they? Tell me.
So one is like high conscientiousness, high agreeableness. People pleasers, right? Mm-hmm. But also we have a relationship investment and blind trust. So relationship investment, we want to work at the relationship where we want to stay and work things out. We'll go to couples counseling. We'll fix this relationship. And that the high relationship investment also means that we're also more likely to be successful because we have that determination to make things work in like business also.
Sure.
And then the blind trust is one where it's just like taking people at face value,
That's,
I know.
I'm like, are you describing me right now? Or are you just, okay, cool.
No, I was called out too. I was like, oh no.
Oh no.
Right. Yeah. And so I think because of that, kind of like moths to a flame, you know, they also like the people that they look good with, you know, so they'll be with somebody that is attractive, is successful. It has been known to be a good person because that reinforces their mask, right? Mm-hmm. It reinforces, oh, I'm with this successful, nice, kind person. So by association, I'm nice and kind.
Yep. I must be, right? Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that because I think there are dudes out there who are just like toxic, but then there is the point at which it crosses into that nice guy narcissist. So what would you say are like the behaviors or the red flags maybe of somebody right. who's a little more like farther into that where it's like, okay, this might be actually, like you said, personality, pathological, like a big problem.
So I say a few things. I'm like, okay, so not every abuser is a narcissist, but every abuser is highly narcissistic because to be abusive, you have to have empathy deficits. You need to have a sense of entitlement. You have to have selfish behavior, right? So people are also like, there's so many, you know, people talking about narcissists. I'm like, I think a lot of people are also just talking about being in an abusive relationship.
Sure, sure.
With someone that, you know, you look at the checklist and you're like, oh, that seems about right. They are grandiose. They are selfish. They do lack empathy. Absolutely. And you have to be an abuser.
Right.
But where it crosses over into, I think, pathological narcissism is, I think if you're in a romantic relationship with them, that cycle, right? The idealization, devaluation, discard, Hoover, the criticism, the abuse tactics, the chipping away at your self-esteem, the very cruel discard, which is it's different than breaking up with someone. It's cruel. It lacks empathy. When I say lack empathy, people's like, well, people can lack empathy. I'm talking about, for example, you're crying, you're breaking down in front of someone and they look at you like they're watching paint dry. That's what I mean by lack empathy. And then after they might either the discard could just happen and they're done with you after that. And you're like, what just happened? Was this all a lie? Was this relationship fake? Like, what is going on? Who is this person? Right. Was I sleeping with a stranger? Like, what is going on?
100%.
Yeah. And then the Hoover is the, you know, can happen. Sometimes it doesn't happen where they're like, hey, want to be friends?
3 months later, they come back around.
Ugh. Yeah, you know, we should be friends. I'm like, no.
Get away from me. You're psycho.
Or we should, like, get back together. Absolutely not. So, yeah, I like to think of it that way. But if I was to diagnose a cluster B and, like, differentiate them between someone that's just kind of shitty and toxic and then pathological, I think a big thing is a lack of effective empathy. Mm. That is a big one. Because they have the cognitive empathy, right? They could visually see someone is in pain, but they're not able to then feel it and really relate in that way. And so you might see them be like, you know, you're crying, you're breaking down or whatever. And they're like, you're too sensitive. You know, the blank stare.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of them like get more angry at you when you cry.
I love that you're bringing up empathy because I think a misconception that happens a lot is they have zero empathy. And then people are like, oh, but he showed empathy here, or he has empathy for his mother, yeah, or he has empathy for dogs or whatever it is. But it's like, it's like Dr. Romney says, it's like, it's limited. It's limited empathy.
Yeah.
For example, like they may have empathy, like, oh, this person was in a car accident. And they could have empathy for that. And they may even enjoy having empathy for that because maybe they, you know, bring them flowers and they get validation or whatever.
Yeah.
They love being the savior. But if, you know, they're driving and you get into a car accident, then they may have no empathy because having empathy for that impacts their sense of self and their mask and this person they're pretending to be. It's like, and in those cases, it's, I feel like when you're fighting with them, they have zero.
Yeah. I couldn't do that to a person I didn't like.
Right.
So them being able to not be able to show that compassion. That's what I mean. It's like compassionate, effective empathy, mm-hmm. Effective, not effective. they can't do that. It's very difficult for them to, especially if it's something like that they've done,
right?
Like, hey, you've hurt me. This was abusive. Then they're going to be like, oh no, you're too sensitive. Or how dare you? Or like I said, the most jarring thing people have seen is like that blank stare. And sometimes the blank stare goes along with like a smirk, which is absolutely terrifying. Oh yeah. I've seen it too.
Are you the devil?
Is this the Joker? No. Is what's happening?
I'm terrified. Well, it's so funny. My mom calls it sharking. But like when it goes black in the eyes and you're like,
the empty eyes.
Yeah. You're like,
yep. I've seen it.
Mm-hmm. I've told it before that one time I was dating this guy and like, long story short, I wanted to be in a relationship. He didn't. I brought up that we were like cuddling, like we were having an intimate moment. And I brought it up and his face dropped and his eyes went black. And he's like, I don't want to talk about this again.
It's very jarring if you've seen it, right? Ooh. It's almost like they're dropping the mask and then putting it back.
Yeah.
On. I think honestly one of the most terrifying experiences people can have.
It's horrifying. It's a horror movie.
It's horrifying. Yeah. Cause you're like,
What
was that?
Yeah. And like in horror movies, that happens all the time. Like someone gets possessed
Yes.
and they're like, do something crazy and then go back to normal. And you're like, and of course they gaslight you immediately after. And they're like, what? What do you
Yeah.
mean? It's
What do you mean?
so, yeah.
It's like a, I don't know how to describe it. If you've seen it, if you've seen it, if you know, you
Yeah,
know. But it's
right.
like the, you know, right? And it's like having a normal conversation, like they're just like that, and they go back.
Yeah.
And it's like really quick, and it's so, I don't even know how to describe it. I can't do it, but it's like, it's terrifying.
It's like the creepy kids in movies. It's not childlike, but when there's a creepy kid in the movie that's possessed and they're acting like a kid, then all of a sudden they say something
Yes.
super messed up, an adult, and then they're like, okay, bye, and do a kid thing. And you're like, that kid's
That's it.
the almond, the goat, remember the
That's
bad
it
almond?
exactly. Professor Sam Vaknin calls it narcissists are like children, but more like children of the corn. Which is accurate. That's
I mean, facts.
absolutely,
Sorry, facts.
yeah, it's pretty scary.
Oh.
Especially the nice guy narcissists, because they come to you really vulnerable and childlike, and then you notice, oh, they're selfish, they lack empathy. That was happening here.
Something that you talk about that I know you talk about in your book, and I see in your TikTok videos as well, you do a really good job about breaking down covert abuse, right? So this is not the overt things where it's like, I'm not hitting you, I may not be like screaming in your face. Like it's the things that almost go under the radar and are like harder to even like nail down, pinpoint, articulate, and really like be able to say are even happening to you, right? So will you talk a little bit about like what does the covert abuse with these type of nice guys who are narcissistic or maybe full-blown narcissists, what is that looking like?
Usually starts off with small criticisms disguised as jokes.
Negging. Those little
Yeah.
Oh, I hate
That little
that.
negging. Yeah, it's after they love bomb you, they're gonna start pulling away and you're gonna start vying for their attention and affection. And they know that. It's very manipulative. Then they're gonna start talking down to you. It's gonna be very condescending. And then it goes into like demeaning you, humiliating you. And then nothing you do is good or right or good enough. Scrutinizing everything you do. And the way they speak to you is gonna be like speaking to a small child.
Oh, so true.
And in my book, I have like I list, you know, this is an abuse tactic, this
Yes.
is manipulation, and kind of like breaking that down. So people have like a name of what is happening, like what is that, and what does gaslighting even look like? Because it's not always, oh, I was just joking. It's other those subtle things. Mine was more, you know, the house was immaculate, but anything I left out, he made it seem like it was a. You know, it was horrible and not done right. I took photos of the pots I didn't clean properly and showed me
Oh,
what a bad job I did.
oh my
Oh my God,
God.
yeah.
Oh my God. I've had that too, where it's like they
Oh.
convince you you're like a mess, or like I
Yeah.
had just you're immature, you're a mess. And I would be like,
Oh, immature. Immature. I
yes.
got that one too. I'm so
No,
sorry.
you're
Yeah, go
no, girl, come in with me. But like you're
ahead.
tripping over yourself. And then someone else is like, it was what? You left a
Yeah.
dish out and you're a mess. What
Yeah.
about the rest of the house? And you're like, oh,
Yeah,
okay.
I would look like a model home.
Oh, so that's reality. I get it. I get it.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
it's like a manipulation of your reality almost. And then because of that, you internalize it. You think you're not good enough. You do need to be better and all of these things. So you internalize it instead of thinking that the other person is purposefully chipping away at your self-esteem and manipulating your reality to support their own agenda.
It's the subtlety and like the chipping that is so hard to recognize until you've had it happen. One of the like the last narcissistic person I dealt with, like they, you know, I was idolized, I was perfect, I was this whatever,
Of
like
course.
complimented me
Yeah.
to the point of like, I'm gonna throw up, like this is too much, like I'm
Yeah. You're
overwhelmed. Yeah,
goddess.
like,
Like, I'm sure you're.
yeah.
Yeah.
You're the, oh my God,
Yeah.
you're so amazing. I can't believe you're talking to me. Ugh, like, give me a break.
Right.
And then it was like little things like, I remember he like made fun of my shoes. I was like,
It's a little thing. It starts off small.
yeah. And you're like, I was like, he's like, are you gonna wear those shoes? And like, obviously I was gonna wear them because I wore them. So like,
Right.
no, this is my one pair and I have a spare in the car. But it was, it's like these little things that make you question yourself. They're subtle. Like, oh, is that how you're going to wear your hair? Like, oh, that was kind of weird what you said at dinner. It's just
and that's enough. Also what we call coercive control.
Yeah,
it's the controlling, manipulating the way they prefer for you to look.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done very subtly like that. I prefer, it starts off as preference. It's like, I prefer you not wear those shoes. I prefer you wear your hair this way. I prefer if you wear makeup or don't wear makeup. And then it stops being preference and then starts to turn into demands, because when you start to, you know, do something they don't like, that's when they blow up on you and criticize you more. Mm-hmm. So it's a controlling behavior.
It's their boundary, as Jonah Hill would say.
Oh my God.
Not a boundary. Yeah.
That was so triggering.
I was absolutely triggered by that. And the amount of men, not to bring him up again, but the amount of men in the comment sections that were like, that's his preference. Like, what's the big deal?
Oh yeah. I was like, right. He got into a relationship with someone who he already knew the way she was. And then once they were in the relationship, tried to change the person. That's a coercive controlling tactic.
Entirely. And yeah, he knew who she was. He liked her for that. He engaged the very things that attracted him to her, which we know that because like she had a surfing pic in a bikini. He liked it and said mm-hmm. how hot she was. That was like their first interaction, right? He then was using to say she was terrible. And he was also setting expectations on her that he was not abiding by.
Yeah.
Like you can't surf, but I can.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why I'm yelling from the rooftops on my TikTok, because I'm like, we need more education. There needs to be, because what we see is people that are incredibly misinformed about abuse tactics and what abuse really entails, seeing things from the outside in and not realizing that this is abuse,
mm-hmm.
right? And so they side with the abuser because they are misinformed. They don't have the language to understand what's going on. They don't understand what it's a power and control dynamic, you know? So they will say stuff like, oh, it's just a preference. And I'm like, absolutely, that's no. my alarm bells were going off.
Yeah, and I think it's also like men who have done something similar and can't accept how bad what they did was, like men who have participated, because a lot of men do participate in that type of coercive control. Like a lot.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I think about the men I've dated, like maybe it's just me. I've already said I have terrible taste in men, but like they would try to control what I'd wear and then it would get worse. But there were people who would do those things and it was seen as normal. It was seen as acceptable. Yeah. To dictate the way that I looked and the way that my hair was. Even if there wasn't yelling, there were repercussions. And that's a lot of the covert nature. It's like they will let you know they don't like something in different ways. They will pull back. They will give you the silent treatment. There are ways that you are punished for not doing what they like that are not like outlandish, like screaming at you or hurting you physically.
Oh yeah. And then when you actually do the thing that they like, they positively reinforce that
100%
by giving you love and affection. And that is called entraining. And it's something that narcissistic people do. It's similar to Pavlov's experience with dogs, the positive and negative reinforcement.
Yes.
So that's what they'll do. The negative reinforcement. I don't like your hair that way. They don't say it blatantly like that. I prefer if you didn't. And then when you do it the way they want, then they're like, oh, you look amazing. You look so beautiful. All this other stuff, and start giving you affection. And so you think to please the other person, I must behave this way.
Mm-hmm.
So.
God.
Yeah.
It's so crazy how systematic it is.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the hardest things I think for me to accept, especially if they're nice guy, narcissistic people.
Oh yeah.
Is if they're like overtly like nasty or something, you know, you can see like that was mean, that was abusive, that was awful. And I can see that and recognize it and accept it. But when you look back at nice guy narcissists, so much of their abuse and manipulation was what you thought was kindness. And that's so hard. Like all those moments you had with them when they were just like telling you how amazing you were and how special you were and your connection is so different than anybody else. And you have to look back and say, that wasn't love. That was love bombing. That was manipulation. That's so hard.
And it's really hard, because then afterwards you get that feeling, was the whole relationship fake, right? Did they ever care at all? How can somebody pretend like that, right? And it feels like such a betrayal. And that's actually what people in narcissistic abuse, our core wound is betrayal trauma. Mm. Because we trusted somebody so implicitly. And when they violate that trust through abuse, cheating, whatever that they're doing, the rug is pulled out from underneath you. And you're like, who have I been in a relationship with? So it's a sense of betrayal. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think too, for me, I just like to speak for my own experience, because then I'm like, I don't want to speak for anyone else. I'll just say what I feel. But healing from them was so hard, because mm-hmm. it was almost as if there were two distinct people.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. so if you swung too hard and I was like, he's evil, he's awful, he's always been the worst, your brain mm-hmm. rejects that, because it has mm-hmm. information that says, no, he did this for me and he did that for me. So he wasn't always. And then they come back when they hoover, which I hate hoovering, just the worst, which is when they like come back to try and like get you again, whether they have had a breakup and they don't have a feed anymore and they need something mm-hmm. else, but they come back in being nice again, and your brain goes, oh, so they weren't as terrible as my brain made them out to be. And then you just get sucked back in.
It's a trap. Yeah. And we almost wish, can't they just be evil all the time?
Right.
So I could be like, yeah, that's
just have a mustache. Just have an evil mustache, yeah, please.
Like, a little mustache with a twirl.
Yeah. That would be great.
Oh, I wish. Ugh. That's why I always say, like, the most dangerous people aren't the ones running around with devil horns on their heads. Yeah. That's the hardest, most, I think, terrifying part.
Yeah.
Because people think it's easy to spot dangerous individuals.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, and because that makes us feel safe.
Yes.
In society.
Yes.
It makes us feel safe.
Yes.
If I could spot someone dangerous, I could avoid the danger. It's very human.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the more terrifying thing is actually, no. I mean, Ted Bundy, his best friend, Martin Lee, was like, this is the best guy I know. And I would want my sister to marry him. Ted Bundy. So, you know, that's where the extent of the facade, you know,
yeah.
And it is, when you said there's two people, that's what I feel as well. I was after my relationship, yeah. I started Googling, is this possession?
Are demons real?
Yeah, no, honest to God, I felt like there's something happening here.
Sure.
But it's that cognitive dissonance.
Yes.
And that's another thing Dr. Sandra L. Brown describes, is that cognitive dissonance with pathological people. It's the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde persona. Mm-hmm. And trying to wrap our minds around that there's that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde causes cognitive dissonance, because our mind wants to just put someone in a little box and make it tied up in a bow, and it's easy for us to process. But when there's two drastic personalities, almost like two personalities, like just truly like a personality split, which is really narcissism has, like, it's a split.
Yes.
That it's so confusing and hard for us to wrangle with. So what our mind tries to do is focus on one or the other. It's like, this person is evil or this person is good, because we can't wrap our minds around that it's the same person. And it's the hardest thing to get over, especially with a covert narcissist. That's the most difficult part.
100%. And something that I want to touch on, you mentioned the fact of, like, people feel safer if they think, oh no, I could spot this, because you see, and I'm sure on your TikTok, I'm sure you've seen this, right? Where in the comment section, when someone shares their stories about a quote unquote nice guy or a narcissist or whatever, some toxic dude that they've dealt with, immediately in the comment section, people are like, well, I would have done this and I would have done that.
Oh.
And I never would have fallen for this. And it's like,
oh yeah.
People are saying that because it makes them feel safer. It gives them peace of mind, because no one wants to accept that anybody can fall victim to this manipulation. It's not people who are, like, unintelligent. It's not people who are, you know, not well-read. Like, it's not people who are, like, poor, pathetic people that they're taking. It's like, this is anybody. And a lot, oftentimes they go for intelligent people. They go for the people who don't fall victim to these types of behaviors normally.
Oh yeah. A narcissist would never want to be with, well, not never, but typically they don't want to be with someone that they see as weak, like that, because that would be a reflection of them. They see their partners as an extension of themselves.
Yep.
So they're going to go for the attractive, powerful, CEO woman or something along those lines. And you would be surprised how many people that I speak to every day, they're like, I own my own business. I'm, you know, a lawyer. I'm this and that. And I got into this relationship. I don't know what happened. I'm like, it's, you know, that's just what they do. They're very good at what they do.
I've been hit by one post. Like, I'm married to a woman. Like, I was I thought I was immune at that point, because I was like, I'm not dating dudes. How's one going to get me? I am someone who has had such history with it that I literally research it for fun. Like, you know, like, I'm very interested in it. And because I thought this can't happen, I had a guy friend do something terrible, pull some horrible nice guy shit on me. And I was like, damn, it really can get you anytime. And you're not stupid because it does. Like,
yeah,
it's just, they're very skilled at it.
You said that you're with you had a friend that was a narcissist or highly narcissistic.
Yes.
How long did you know that?
I had known him a very long time as an acquaintance. Mm-hmm. He was someone I saw out and about. And so it was very easy for the mask for me. Like, I thought he was truly the greatest guy in the world.
Yeah.
I thought, yeah. I was like, I have this great dude that I'm friends with. Like, but again, I was not close with him. And then I don't know if you heard the story or not, but I had a medical situation where I drank, and because of a medicine I was on, I blacked out. He didn't like that I blacked out. He was embarrassed. He was embarrassed because I was acting erratic because I was drinking blacked out. Like, yeah. I probably should have got my stomach pumped. I don't know what all, no memory for a chunk of that time. And that was when it came out. That was when I saw, there were signs, but it wasn't until I embarrassed him that he unleashed on me.
It's they're not able to feign the empathy.
Yeah.
You know, they can't, you know, put their own self aside to be like, oh, my friend is having a medical emergency and I should probably put my stuff aside and focus on making sure she's okay. You know?
Yeah. He literally bad talked me to the people there.
Amazing. So he also smeared you while you're.
He smeared me while I was blacked out because they told me, smeared me while I was blacked out about how crazy I was being. And he had never met these people. These were strangers. Yeah.
Wow.
And I had known him for a long time.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. I asked because a lot of these narcissists, especially a covert narcissist, they have friends that think they're the best people in the world.
I'm not joking. Like, I talked about this on the podcast. I was going out and my wife had a bad feeling because my wife is queen. Queen. Ugh. I love her. It's fine. But she was like, she had a bad vibe and I ignored it. And you know what I said? I said, don't worry, babe. I'm with insert name. I'll be fine. In the worst case scenario, I thought he would have, like, I thought nothing bad could happen to me because he was there and he ended up being the danger. And it was like, he was like the life of the party. He was the funny guy in the room.
Yeah.
He talked constantly about being a feminist, how much he loves women, how much he defends women. When people say women aren't funny, he's the first to step in and say,
did I date him?
I hope not.
Because, like, I'm just.
Yeah. But
seemed very similar.
And everyone thought that too. And it was because he has a lot of acquaintances. He lives a life of having acquaintances where, you know, people are seeing him in short stints. People are seeing him at big gatherings. People are only, like, he can hold the mask so easily because no one's getting close. And then I ended up realizing that some people he had dated who I ended up talking to afterwards, of course, revealed some things to me, as and some of his friends did too, that I was like, oh, I just wasn't close enough yet. I just hadn't gotten close enough. Like, if we had just gotten close, had we just been acquaintances, he probably would have, you know, helped me to be the good guy. But because I was close to him, I was, as you said, an extension of him at that point. And that is why he punished me, which was he didn't get me help ever. I ended up blackout getting in an Uber. So, like, hours later.
Oh, my God. While you were under that like state.
He left me blacked out for hours. Like I was incoherent and I was doing crazy stuff. Apparently. I don't know. I don't remember, but yeah, he just watched it unfold. Cause he didn't like it. He didn't like what I was doing. So he's like, you know what? I'm going to punish you. I think. And that's the abuse, right? It was like, I know something humiliating is happening to you, but because I think it reflects on me, you're going to have to, we're going to let this roll. And then afterwards, afterwards, I'll tell you how bad you were and how embarrassing you were. Like he texted me to tell me that. Like he only ever reached out to me after that, like 2 weeks later, because he wanted me to know he was mad that I blocked him.
Oh my God. Yeah, exactly. That's the, it's like the other thing where it's like, they did something bad to you,
yes,
but you were supposed to apologize for reacting appropriately.
That's exactly what he was doing.
Disrespect.
Yep. He was waiting for me to apologize to him, which was never going to happen a fucking million years.
They truly think they're the victim though. They absolutely think that your reaction to their abusive, cruel, callous behavior is the issue.
I think that's such a good point to mention because it's actually not them. I mean, they're manipulating you, of course. They're because they want their way, but they believe their bullshit. Like they believe they're not just saying that. Like they honestly, like he honestly felt I had victimized him. And that was the crazy thing is like, I don't know what he thought, but like he had mentioned to me before that girls he had dated, so girls he had been actually dated, right, had gone no contact. He didn't call it no contact, but he was like, oh, they don't talk to me, you know, and how, you know, how hurtful it is that these girls don't talk to him. And like, flag that, everyone. If someone talks about like their all of their exes not talking to them, like that's ringing of no contact, right? But he had mentioned that to me, and then once this happened and I was like, okay, well, we'll never speak again. That's what that is. He was like, how could you do this after I told you the stuff that's gone on in my past, like how women have treated me and everything I've done for you. Like this is how you're going to treat me. Basically like, you know, his trauma he has with his exes, like how could I do that as his friend? And it's like, that's what you got out of this? It's crazy the way that they flip it.
Yeah. I mean, like they do see the world through a distorted lens, right? So that's, we always like, nobody thinks they're the bad guy.
Right.
The bad guy doesn't think they're the bad guy.
Yeah.
The bad guy needs to rationalize in his mind why he did the things that he did.
Yes.
Because he can't sit with himself that he's the bad guy because it causes a lot of shame, right? So they flip it around and they're like, I didn't victimize somebody. I'm the victim. I'm the person that was harmed in this. I think mine said, you changed. You know, I changed because I've been chipped away.
Right.
He's like, you're not this strong woman that I thought you were.
I'm disintegrating.
And in the moment, you've chipped away at me. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they don't see that. They just see that, you know, it's very like immature way of looking at the world, you know, just this person is not the same, so they're the problem.
Yes, you are not fitting into the mold I created of what you should be, despite the fact that I am the one who broke you. You no longer fit the mold. You know, it's interesting. I was just talking to a friend about this, and it's like they have done things that are so heinous. They know what they've done is heinous. They know what they've done is outlandish, and they cannot be the bad guy. They cannot be the villain. So they have to make you so horrible that it justifies what they have done to you. They have to villainize you. They have to make you seem so bad, so like untrustworthy, cheater, liar, pathetic, whatever it is, bitch, crazy, like whatever word they throw out at you. It has to be so big that whatever they did was justified. They're still good. They were just pushed to their limit because they cannot deal with the fact that, no, actually, I just did something really shitty.
Yeah. And that's where the reactive abuse comes in, right?
Let's talk about that. Explain what reactive abuse is for people listening.
Oh my God. And especially from the outside looking in, people could see like, you know, who's the abuser, who's the victim. Because what a reactive abuse does is they, especially a covert abuser, they will very calmly disrespect you, chip away at you, But when you finally react and explode because it's like piling on, they sit back and then they look at you. Look at your reaction. You're the problem. You're so unhinged. You're so immature, et cetera, et cetera. And then you internalize that. You're like, maybe this is not like me. Maybe I am immature. Maybe I am. There's something wrong with me. But you're not like that with anyone else, right? So because of that, because of your reaction, that's how they justify their abuse.
Yep.
You're just as bad as I am.
Right. This is why you act mm-hmm. like this. You think I'm bad? Look at how you act. Oh, yeah. God. It's interesting because now people are kind of pushing against even the term reactive abuse because
I hate the term.
Yeah, because it's like it's not abuse. They're being abused. Like that's not what it is. It's literally like this trauma response to what's happening to you. There's no point at which you're like, I am purposefully like abuse. It's the intent is not there. It's just which I'm glad we're taking that away because I don't think it's abuse either. I think it's like you're being abused and this is kind of what happens. But it's really sad because it really sticks people. Like I remember similar to what you're saying, like when I dated a really, really bad one in my early 20s, who actually started liking me when I was 16 and he was in his mid 20s. So that's a fun one. Narcissists Yikes. Love to be groomers, just for the record. They'll put you they'll shelf you, but they'll be ready when you are old enough. Anyways, we don't need to get into that. But so he was horrible. But something he would do was he would do that cycle of abuse where he would, you know, chip away at me and neg at me and nothing was ever good enough. And I was immature and I was this and I was that and that was the other thing to the point where I would break or I would cry or I would mess up because I mean, I was so on edge with this dude. I was constantly walking on eggshells. I can't even, well, you'd probably know if you've experienced it, but it's like holding cups, doing things because he was always talking about how messy I was. So I was like, terrified of making spills or spilling something and you'd scream. It was awful anyways. But then I would lash out because I was, you know, terrified and bottled up and what they would deem as reactive abuse. And then he would be like, see, you're immature. You need to get it together. And then I would go to him to help me regulate my emotions that stemmed from his abuse.
Yeah.
It's
and
sick.
It's such a mind fuck.
Yes.
It is sick. It is. Yeah. And you're like, how people listening, I'm sure, like, how can anyone do that? Right?
That's our point.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the point. We're not exaggerating when I say how malicious these people are. Like, this is not a joke. That fucks with somebody, especially someone that's like self-reflective. And you're like, why am I acting like this? Like, man, it messes you up. It makes you feel like there's something wrong with you. And that's why a lot of victims, they go into therapy because they think they're the problem.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
They think that, oh my God, what is happening to me? Maybe I am immature. And I was so like, I'm just so glad I was in a healthy relationship before this. So I was like, there's something wrong here.
This isn't right.
It's that mental abuse. It really messes you up mentally.
When you hear the degree of it, when you hear the really bad stuff, it's easy to listen and be like, oh my God, I would never put up with that. Which like I would say about myself, right? But it's because it starts off so warm and nice and friendly and perfect and fairy tale. And these subtle ways that they start to chip away at you, it happens over time. I was just talking to my friend about the way that this happens, like when if you threw somebody in boiling water, they'd be like, oh my God, too hot, get out. But if you slowly crank the dial, you know, over time, you don't realize you're boiling. You don't realize.
That's it exactly. I have a whole chapter in my book called Frogs in Boiling Water.
Oh! That's right.
That's it exactly. It's, you know, if you were to throw someone like a, you know, a frog, lobster, whatever analogy, into a pot of boiling water, they're going to jump right out, right? They're like, this sucks. It starts off like nice and lukewarm water. You're like, this is actually, wow, this is great. This is a hot tub.
Yeah.
And then like after it slowly starts cranking and you're like, what means me? And then it gets a little worse. And then there's usually that one aha defining moment where like, oh no, this is abuse.
Yes.
But it doesn't happen until way later. And that later could be, I've heard people 5 years, 10 years with a person and not realize what's happening. And they've just become a shell of themselves because it's so slow and gradual. Even if you like do realize it's abuse, it's so hard to leave.
Yeah.
It's hard to leave because there's that cognitive dissonance. There's the trauma bond. There's so many things that prevent you from leaving. It's so insidious. It's that slow progression.
There's a quote from Saltburn, which I have not watched the movie fully, but she talks about how one of the characters, I don't want to reveal anything either, but I'll say a character, one of the characters describes another character, don't give any details, but that you're a moth, you're drawn to the light, mm-hmm. but you can't help but put holes in what you're drawn to. And I think that's so true. They're like this, it's this very strange thing where like they genuinely are attracted to bright things mm-hmm. and they want that, but it gets to the point where at some point you're so close that you're no longer just yourself, you're an extension. And if you're shining bright, then you're shining brighter than them and they can't mm-hmm. stand that. So that's when they start to literally just pull all your light out and just turn you into a shell of what you were. Mm-hmm. And it's this crazy process where they destroy the thing they were initially attracted to. I don't have much empathy for narcissists, I guess, which is, you know, ironic.
No, I get those comments all the time. Oh, they have a lot of trauma, da, 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 all this stuff. I'm over here like, I don't care.
a lot of us do.
As a person with highly empathetic, almost to a detriment person, yes. but I'm just like, I've seen people's lives ruined by this type of person.
That's what Ramani says. She's like, they're one of the only like disorders where it's like they purposefully, willfully, and you know, meticulously destroy mm-hmm. people with pleasure.
Yeah, sometimes with pleasure.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're going into psychopathy there too, ooh. Right? Like sometimes with pleasure. Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. So what would you say, like, what do you say to somebody who's trying to heal from,
oh my God,
nice guy narcissism?
So there isn't like a step-by-step do this thing right. and equal heal. I wish there was.
Right.
It would make my life a lot easier.
Same.
I think the first step is education. And I think what's really wonderful now is not only women talking about our experiences, but we're talking about our experiences in abusive relationships. And we have so many resources now, which we didn't have before. Listen to other women's experiences. Listen to other people that are talking about this very loudly. And I love that we're all healing so loudly now. And I think that's the first step. And then, you know, after that, talk to a professional, talk to somebody that's been through it, talk to a therapist that's abuse informed. It's a very difficult thing to heal from because it causes betrayal trauma. And it's like, you need to have someone that's experienced in this, like guide you through it, because otherwise you're just kind of what happened in a state of confusion.
So the back of your book, I took a photo of mm-hmm. it because I love it. I'm just going to read it because I think it's so profound. The nice guy abusers, while they can be any gender, these individuals possess the ability to appear gentle, kind, vulnerable, and even empathetic. It is precisely this facade that renders their abuse so insidious and bewildering, making it exceedingly difficult for those ensnared in such relationships to detect the toxicity. Damn. That's exactly right. It is so insidious. So I 100% agree with you. Like, this is not simple. This is not like, oh, you had a breakup, just talk to your gal pals, which, you know, maybe your gal pals have also had narcissistic abuse and then maybe, but this is something that is so hard to unpack and understand and work through. And again, I've said this before, you will never truly understand it. You will never, unless you're a narcissist yourself, you will not get how they can do these things. You got to let that one go. Mm-hmm. But you can understand it enough to process and heal from it. And I think like your book is out there. There's other books. Like I always say, like Dr. Ramani, that's like my go-to.
Yeah.
Besides your book, like, do you have any suggestions that you think people would be helped by?
So many. I've read them all. I really love The Covert Passive Aggressive Narcissist by Debbie Marza.
Mm, okay.
That Isn't that a title? The covert passive aggressive narcissist. I mean, that is it.
That's it.
Because their abuse is passive aggressive. And you're like, what did they mean? Just like, I mean, constantly, I was like, did he mean to be hurtful? I don't understand. Like, right. Why would he say that? I think another really good one, I know this is like a really jarring title, but Psychopath 3 from Jackson McKenzie. And it's like healing from narcissists, psychopaths, and other toxic people.
Sure.
Dr. Sandra L. Brown, I love all of her work. And she has like, I think, the best understanding. Dr. Romani is also wonderful. Mm-hmm. Like, Should I Stay or Should I Go is a wonderful book. Mm. Dr. Romani's book, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Read that if you're in an abusive relationship. Why Does He Do That by Lundy Bain?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Great book. Great book.
Oh my God. Yeah. I think every heterosexual woman, or actually just anyone, needs to read that book before you're out there into the dating world. Read that first. Because I feel like it's a manual. Everyone needs to read that. It's the Lundy Bancroft worked with abusive men for 20 years, and he talks about their mentality and abuse tactics and just why do they abuse and what's power and control and why do they need to control people. So it's really important.
God, I don't envy that. I don't envy that, having to deal with those men. Woo. But yeah, it is good. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on today. You are so knowledgeable. And, you know, I love to say my opinions and my theories, but it's so great to have someone who's educated. Those, the research of what, you know, is backed by data and things. But how else can people hear from you if they're looking to, besides your book, which I mentioned, but how else can they hear from you?
Yeah. So I'm on TikTok, although TikTok is being really mean to me right now.
It does do that.
TikTok. No narc sense. I thought that was funny.
I freaking love it. I love your username. Every time I see it, I'm like, huh.
I was like, that's funny. We got to laugh, otherwise we're going to cry.
Or
both. I'm No Narc Sense on Instagram and TikTok.
And your book. Your book is...
And my book, yeah. But they're so nice. Unmasking Covert Abuse and Narcissistic People.
Your TikTok videos are so insightful. It's so nice as someone who's experienced it to have someone come with like the research and like, here's why that's happening and here's what we found about this. Like, to have that backed by science, even if it's just like that annoying guy is like, where'd that come from? Why do you think that? You're like, actually, no narc sense.
No.
Here's the study.
That is why I make it the way I do, because I get the comments that are like, well, this isn't true. I'm like, well, here are my citations. Here are my sources. Here's the peer-reviewed research.
Not that ever, you know, changes their mind, but yeah. No, I just am such a fan of your content. Thank you so much for being here. Make sure you check out all of her content and her book, the book she's mentioned, like she's an incredible resource. And obviously I'm a fan because here we are. Well, thank you again for joining me here today. I will have all of her links in the description of this episode so you can find her easily. Thank you to everyone that's listened. Don't forget, we have a Patreon if you want to join that. And if you've enjoyed this episode or any of our episodes, please make sure to give us a review on Spotify or Apple, wherever you can. It's a really big help. So thank you again for listening. And as always, my friends,
F the nice guy.